Okay, I'm too short to see the screen. Let me just do this. Here we go. So yes, I'd just like to, good morning and welcome. This is a casual and informal presentation today. So what I'd like to do is, next slide please. Okay. Is to talk briefly this morning about who the At-Large Study Committee is, what we aim to do, and specifically the issues that we need to address. Many of you have been curious as to how much work we've actually done so far. There'll be a brief report here, what that remains to do, and specifically how you may help. At the end, I would just like to open up for any Q&A if you have any questions. Currently, the committee comprises three individuals. Myself as one of the vice chairs, Charles Costello, who you probably know from last year's election process, he likes to be referred to as Chuck, and Mr. Carl Bildt. The committee was appointed in January 22nd, although we only got together for the first time in February. We have spent some time and considerable thinking in terms of proposing other individuals who we are aware of, who have, we believe, the skill sets and relationships necessary in some sense to try and make this study successful, or as successful as possible. Is Pierre here? Pierre Dangenou? No, I think it's still too early in the day. Chingy. The three of us are here, as well as Oscar. Oscar is also here, and Denise who's not here, our executive director. So as I said, there may be some time during the GA in which you may hear this presentation, but I'd just like to use this time this morning to do some outreach. It seems to be somewhat of an ICANN tradition to see where people, which region in the world people come from. This slide is trying to address that. The reason why the six members on the screen are listed in blue is because they're still proposed. And what we're expecting later on, early next week during the ICANN board meeting, is for our proposal to, I would hope, be ratified. When that happens, they'll be changed from blue to black. Okay. If you look on our website, the URL will be at the very end of this presentation, the most important slide, by the way. here's a brief slide as far as our backgrounds. This is probably the more important slide, which is the set on the composition of skills that each individual has. I'd just like to do a little disclaimer. These slides are a personal view, which is probably why the question marks at the bottom probably mean it's a little bit difficult for me to review myself. It's probably not that I have no skill. One thing I did leave out from this slide is languages spoken, and I think I'll try and add that at some point, but we did pay some special sensitivity to the multilingualness of the individual members. I myself speak Cantonese. So what do we aim to do? Well, very simply, we aim to fulfill our charter. What is our charter? The charter itself sets out what we are to do. It's again on our website. It defines the scope of the study, the issues that we're supposed to address, issues surrounding participation, deliverables, and some other items too. However, the specific area of the study really involves a study of three things: the concept, the structure, and processes relating to the at-large membership in ICANN, as per the bylaws. In doing so, we are paying special attention to finding ways to try and forge consensus in the process by which we seek input to the study, and as such, outreach such as meetings like these are particularly important. And we would like to seek and encourage input from all sectors, both individual and institutional entities who are interested in this topic and wish to contribute. Also, we are encouraging, given our own limited resources so far, only three of us, to coordinate with other studies that may be conducted, and we are aware of a small number of them so far. One thing I'd like to draw your attention to in the note at the bottom is the following, that the committee works without preconception as to a preferred outcome, and that previous decisions and conclusions regarding at-large membership will be informative but not determinative. And what that means to me is the following. It does mean that there's no question which is too basic, no principle too sacred to ask questions about. And that's especially important for this study, given that it is a clean sheet study. In some sense, some people have compared the work that we are about to do to that of an initiative before called the Membership Advisory Committee, or the MAC. That came up through some discussions yesterday, some of the presentations I made. And really, one should remember that in some sense, our starting point is different. We can ask, for example, the very interesting question of why should there be at-large members? It's not taken as given. In that respect, it is clean sheet. If you look in the ICANN bylaws together with our charter, there are specifically listed a number of questions, which again I show here. Should the ICANN board include at-large directors? If so, how many? How many such at-large directors should there be, et cetera, et cetera? We spent some time just looking at how so far the committee can try to find some input into to help answer these questions. And we've structured it slightly differently, which I'll go through a little bit later. Next one. The strategy that we're adopting, at least to date, for the last month that we've done some work, is as follows. It is obviously to listen and to encourage ideas and other studies to try and generate some kind of agreement. Whilst there is some concern on us to generate some kind of conclusion or some kind of result, one should, getting there is as, if not more important, to have the so-called community consensus, if there is any, as far as whatever results we produce. The initial focus is on participation, as I said, of organizations and individuals worldwide, and to encourage the development of independent studies and analysis. The long-term focus, however, is on trying to document at least whatever results of the studies are produced. So in that regard, distributing draft proposals and concept papers to help generate the consensus is part of that focus. So what have we done so far? I would say a good half or more of our time has been spent on administrative issues, getting our website up. Again, the URL is there. We had a preparatory meeting in Washington, D.C. Last month, and we've just begun to establish some email lists. We've also drafted a preliminary report, which we're presenting on Monday, which primarily revolves around budgetary activities. How did we get there? Obviously, we tried to produce a schedule of activities which we would like to have funded for us to conduct our work, the basis of which, if we have time, I would like to go through. But we posted the preliminary budget on our website yesterday. As part of our charter, there is some portion at the very end which deals with presenting and doing studies on aggregate data from the last year's single-point sample election. So we've done some initial data analysis, which is now on the website, which I'd draw your attention to. Now, so far to date, we have negotiated with ICANN with respect to getting access to last year's email list for those members to inform those members of our existence. That process took a little bit of time, a little bit more time than I had expected. And I would just like to note that ICANN does take extremely seriously, I think, its commitment to how it will treat and deal with the data that it gathered from last year's election. So something which to me seemed a no-brainer and relatively straightforward to do was actually non-trivial. So what we managed to negotiate is send out an email to those of you who are at large members to inform you of our existence. So what I'd like to do is ask the audience today, how many in the audience are at large members? Good morning, welcome. You should have received an email about the formation and existence of this committee. If you haven't, please let me know. I've had two people come up so far and said, hey, I didn't receive an email. I would like to know if you didn't receive that email. But since that email has gone out, we've had about 4,000, just over 4,000 people asked to join our announced mailing list. And so far, we have also received over 130 comments to our input email list. As far as outreach activities, there was one that I'm aware of, which was one I conducted myself, and that was during Apricot. The Regional Internet Operators Forum, where 888 odd hardcore engineers got together in Kuala Lumpur on Tuesday the 27th, and together with a distinguished gentleman and friend, Izumi Aizu, conducted the Birds of a Feather meeting. As I said, we've emailed out large members and other lists. There was a meeting on Friday afternoon, sort of a last-minute addition to the schedule once the committee got formed. That had about 60 people participating in Bellarine 2. Yesterday we had outreach efforts at the DNSO ISPC, Internet Service Providers Constituency, the Business Constituency, and the Non-Commercial Domain Name Holders Constituency. I would say two of those went very well. The last one did not go as well, partly because of some confusion on my part, for which I apologize. We also had a brown bag lunch yesterday from 12:30 through 1:30, I think. So as far as preliminary data analysis, here are the categories which I won't spend too much time on, given I'm stealing some time already. For example, the database total, for example, the total number of records in, number of email bounces, letter bounces, duplicate entries. You can see here the types of aggregate data that we can present so far. That's in the registration by date. For those of you who, are interested in doing your own studies to look at how many people are registered to become an at-large member and what date, that information is provided here. And for those people who've registered, how and when did they activate? Again, here's some aggregate data there. Activation delay, this is fairly interesting, which is the number of members activating within a given number of days after having their PIN letter sent out. For example, the delay of 9 days, there were 4,491. Such individuals. Oops. Here are some tables, and again, we summarize potentially in a different way some of the data that has been presented before. We present it in a slightly different manner. Role and occupation, for example, distribution of across different regions and the business categories in which they say their role or occupation is. How did they hear about the election? That's also fairly interesting. So I would draw your attention to the fact that this data is now available on our website, and if you're interested to go and take a look. So what does there remain to be done? Well, clearly, given that with the 22 of us right now, there's still much that we can do, much that we should do, and much that we will do in terms of outreach, participation, and obviously our own internal administration. One thing I would stress, however, is there's been some concern both within the committee and I do know within the public in terms of the fairly tight time schedule that we have to do our work. With the understanding that our schedule must conclude with an ICANN board decision that can be fully implemented as required by the current bylaws no later than the ICANN annual meeting in 2002. So what does this mean? this means from a practical sense that if it takes a year to implement whatever recommendation or whatever result we come up with, then we're looking at the annual general meeting in 2001 to formally conclude or present our final results of our study. That will be in November this year, the exact date of which I believe is still floating. There's a 60-day public comment period, which brings the deadline for our draft being sometime in September. So with that, it's fairly obvious that there is a tight timetable. And the reason why I'm personally optimistic that we will be able to achieve a lot of work between now and then is there's been some great work done before. I've heard some criticisms that, oh, well, goodness, everything that needs to be said about this topic has been said. Everything has been sort of thrashed to death. I would make the following two notes. The starting point for this study is different. No question is too basic, no concept too sacred that one can ask questions about, together with the fact that if you have said it before, or even better, if you've written it down, then please say it again or cut and paste. So as our schedule, we have two types of meetings in our mind, which may occur at the same time, one of which are outreach meetings, which are meetings such as the one we're having here in Melbourne. The purpose of outreach meetings are to obviously outreach to seek input, but it's not to make any decisions at any of the outreach meetings. In order to develop our own consensus within the committee, we are planning and budgeting for having what we would call working meetings. These are meetings, two-day meetings, two full days, in which we expect all committee members to attend and for us to try and reach some conclusion. Now, with respect to taking input to the committee and for us to produce our output, we have spent some time thinking about how the committee should operate. The end result so far, which I would like to see your input to and hear some comments from, is that the committee will work and seek input from and output to primarily through email. So anyone who has access to email will be able to participate. Now, there obviously will be other online mechanisms such as the web, discussion forums, and the like, but the principal mechanism will be email. Obviously, within our own operations, the committee will work also by email. We'll have regular teleconferences and these working meetings, these two face-to-face. As I said, there are some times that we may have both an outreach meeting and a working meeting. That's really for sort of a budget review. For example, we're looking at Stockholm at the in the middle of this year. That will be both an outreach meeting and a working meeting. Now, I would like to note that as far as budgetary purposes, an outreach meeting, what we're planning to do is propose that the executive director, Denise, are you in the room? No, the executive director will attend all outreach meetings, so you can guarantee that she'll be there, and that you can minimally expect three members of the committee to attend, such as what we're having here in Melbourne. Why three? If you participated in the session on Friday afternoon, you'll very quickly recognize there's many different points of view, there's many different things to grasp. My brain power is somewhat limited. I will obviously come away from that meeting with a certain perspective. The reason for three is to have some consensus on actually what happened among the members of the committee who are there, the executive director obviously being neutral in this whole exercise. So that's how the number three committee members and one executive director to attend the outreach meetings. Working meetings, obviously, all hands on deck. That's nine committee members, three committee members, six proposed. When that's been ratified, it'll be nine committee members plus the executive director. Again, the view here is to issue a draft of our results. There may be preliminary reports before then, which we'll send by email in September, with a view of having a final report in November at the annual general meeting for this year too. So, give you an example of the agenda that we—it's actually not yesterday, sorry, it's on Friday. We spent quite a bit of time to structure the meeting, given that this is the first such outreach meeting to let those who physically participated to get to know one another. I think that's a very important objective of this meeting, is just to let those people who are interested, to allow them the opportunity to self-organize. And it was quite delightful to see some of the dynamics in the room. We tried something in the afternoon called structured discussions in order to try and direct the many different concerns of those who participated. As I said, we're charged to answer some questions. We've looked at the phrasing of those questions. And this is kind of the list that we came up with. It's a list of examples, but it goes to show the kinds of thinking that we've done and where we are today. There are people who are participating in this process whose English is not good or if not non-existent. So as such, we've tried to structure the questions in relatively straightforward in a relatively straightforward manner, which can address the concept, structure, and processes that we're charged to try and find some consensus on. For example, who should be an at-large member? And you can go through the list yourself. I should note, however, the following, that in spite, we are fully aware of the global nature of this study, different languages that are spoken, the different types and of access that individuals have to the network, to the internet, sorry. And it's difficult from our perspective to budget for translation in spite of the fact that we would really like to do that. So we've actually come to make a few hard, at least decisions, at least in the number of days. Obviously, these could be reversed, but I think it's unlikely. And I think the decisions that we've come to are fairly sound, which is the following. The working language of this committee and the input that we're taking, actually, maybe not the input that we're taking, but the working language of our activities is English and will be English. And we're not budgeting for any translation. The reason here, well, what do you translate into which languages, and who's going to finance it? Now, there are other entities which are better suited for translation. Just a side note here is that we were very graciously given some time during the Government Advisory Committee to present a very similar presentation, and there I hopefully pleaded with those members in the room to also assist with the outreach, and also if they could possibly arrange so, try to do some translation. Governments tend to be fairly good at these kinds of things. So how you can help? Obviously, please participate, please provide your input, please provide knowledgeable input, which means that there is some homework to do. Prior to this meeting, in terms of our call and notice for meetings, we put up some basic documents which we would like everyone to read and read again and again and think deeply about. So that's really why we've structured the work done so far in that way. Obviously, when the committee is fully formed, we'll go through sort of a last call process. But I'm here today just to do some outreach and also to hear some feedback from those members here today. This is the most important slide, which is the URL for our website and the email address to which to send comments. Now, I see that one of the co-chairs is here. It's just 9:01, so with that, I can thank you for your time, and please grab me at the front if you have any questions or comments. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Sorry for this misunderstanding about the schedule. I had 9 o'clock, and so anyway, we were planning to give anyhow to provide some time for this presentation from Pinda. I think it's very important that in the future of ICANN, I think that the question of involving more and more people in the at large is one of the key questions, and so especially we as General Assembly, I think that we have to also provide all the help that we can in order to outreach to the at large members. In starting the General Assembly, I would like first of all to remind the draft agenda that the draft agenda was sent to the GA list for comments about a week ago. We plan to start as usual with some administrative reports from the Secretariat, and then we have the feedback from the constituencies and working group, and then we get into the real the hot issues. The first point on the agenda in the hot issues is the election of the GA chair. As you all know, my term has expired already a few months ago, and so we are proceeding with the elections. We have another topic, which is the DNSO review, and then we have some other items that we may want to discuss, all the things that happened in the last couple of weeks. We have the agreement, the proposal for the new agreement with VeriSign. I don't want to spend hours on this because there will be a slot in the ICANN open meeting. But still, if the General Assembly wants to, if there's somebody that wants to comment on that, that will be in order. So any other thing that you feel has to be on the agenda and we have forgotten? No, okay. There's one comment that I would like to make before opening. In Marina del Rey, at the last meeting we had, at one point the discussion becomes so overheated in the room that I completely forgot to take the comments from the rest of the world, and I would like to apologize again. I would ask the great people of the Berkman Center that are helping us in keeping the contact with the rest of the world to make also some visual sign to me and to call my attention on the comments that are coming from outside. The usual recommendation that I make is please turn your cell phones off. Okay, I think that we can start with the report from the Secretariat.
Thank you, Roberto. My name is Elizabeth Portunov. I am from working for AFMIC, and we are still in charge of providing minimal DNSO secretariat service. and we are on the way to formalize it and to make it better defined and with better structure. The report is about the last 3 or 4 months since Los Angeles. The Names Council subgroup, so-called budget committee, has been working on the budget, necessary budget to have the DNSO functioning, the Secretariat for the Names Council and also the Secretariat for the General Assembly, to define the minimal amount of funds we need to provide the service, to define the additional amount of funds the Names Council need to have some substantial work being done with the working groups. And we are, the Names Council is at the stage of report on the situation and to present the financial need, the profile of work which shall be done, and how the Names Council will proceed to hire the staff to the DNSO Secretariat. One important issue still as far as I understand not decided completely is that there is a legal structure necessary to hire staff and to be able to have a bank account and to raise funds. So this is still under discussion by the Names Council, but probably will be sorted out very soon. So I hope that by the next summer we are going to have the structure, the Secretariat, established in a more professional way, not on the voluntary basis, and it will help us to work better and in a better condition with the much better procedures. I think that AFNIC is still providing service. We committed to when the DNSO Secretariat, Voluntary Secretariat, was set up in Berlin in 1999, AFNIC committed to provide the service for free for the initial 6 months, which means 99. We have been working in all the year 2000, and we presented the invoice to the Names Council. This invoice has been accepted. And under 3 conditions, that AFNIC is going to provide free of charge service for the 3 initial months in the year 2001, that AFNIC is going to give to the successor of the current Secretariat all the software we might have developed for the voting system, and that we accept to transfer the content of the DNSO server to whoever will be in charge of the DNSO Secretariat later. We accepted all this condition, and we are providing the service on the voluntary basis until the end of March. I believe that is all, Roberto. Thank you.
Any comment on this? Clarification. Okay. I would like to, if there's no need for further discussing this administrative part, I would like to move to the next point in the agenda, which is the feedback from the constituencies. We have an order which is just the alphabetical order of the constituencies, but I mean, there's no strict need to follow strictly this order. The first one is the CCTLD. I don't know if there will be some kind of feedback. I know that there were several meetings with the CCTLDs.
I don't see anybody in the audience yet from CCTLD. As you all know, I have also CCTLD heart, but I would prefer the report given by somebody else from my constituency.
Well, let's
so maybe we wait until... Yes, I know that the people from Asia-Pacific region have a meeting this morning, and however, I've been requesting somebody from either Administrative Committee or the Names Council as a delegate to report if we happen to have the delegate by the end of this lot of time. We will appreciate to have it report out. If not, I may give some information myself, but it is better to have it from somebody else.
Okay, somebody from the commercial business constituency. Yeah.
Good morning, everybody. Philip Shepherd from the business and commercial constituency. We had an interesting meeting yesterday. We discussed a whole range of issues, but out of that, I think two in particular came out as being something that we felt that we'd like to raise a bit of awareness on. So I can take the opportunity here to do so, and we'll be doing something rather similar during the public session for the board later. The first issue was to do with the multilingual domain names. Now, as business people, we're rather interested in this because anything that is better for the consumer in terms of communication, we liked very much. However, we were given a very interesting presentation by somebody who understands the technicalities of that. He started off saying, I'm going to speak to you about 15 minutes, and I'm likely to be scaring you. And we said, oh yeah, we're big people, we're not going to be scared. And he gave us a presentation, and 15 minutes later, all of us were truly scared. And we were scared in particular, I think, because of four key factors which we saw impacting consumers. And I shall just list those now. The retrieval of who is data in languages not understood by those retrieving it may well lead to more bad faith registrations. The necessary standardization of translation rules may well increase consumer confusion. Inappropriate choices of character translation rules is likely to add to uncertainty in domain name resolution and therefore to do with trademark and IP infringements. And a desire to achieve progress quickly could well lead to local solutions which end up being incompatible with the global nature of the net. A contributory solution we understood from our presentation yesterday would be to look at the possibility of an underlying directory structure, and we would like to encourage more study in this direction. And tomorrow we will be making an appeal to the board to consider something like a multilingual advisory expert group to assist them in resolving some of these issues that we were alerted to yesterday. The second thing that came out of our meeting was a discussion on the VeriSign agreement, I guess like everybody's had over the last 48 hours or so. And from there were two concerns that came up in particular when we're trying to look at, well, okay, what does it mean? We can see what it may mean for VeriSign, we can see what it may mean for ICANN, but what does it mean for the business community and in particular our customers and consumers? And we felt that we were concerned that the underlying assumptions upon which the concept of the revised agreement was made perhaps has a little bit more uncertainty in it than we'd heard so far. And the uncertainty we felt came from two areas. It was not certain the nature of the stable competitive climate has changed sufficiently. There was a relatively low threshold for accreditation and ease of market entry to be a new registrar, and we understand that the possibility of failures of some of the new registrars is possible. The BCA is therefore concerned about the apparent lack of redress for business registrants whose registrar fails, and we would recommend to ICANN to prepare contingencies for that. And secondly, the registrar-registrar relationship with the new open TLDs are all potentially less monopolistic relationships with lower market power than that proposed in the new VeriSign agreement. The BCA therefore does not believe that the question as to the relationship of a monopoly supplier, i.e. a registry, and a co-owned retailer of registrar, has been sufficiently explored for existing and new TLDs, and we will be encouraging the board to look a little further in that direction. There were the two main points I wanted to raise. Thank you.
Any question or clarification? Okay, thank you. GTLDs?
Good morning. I'm Chuck Gomes from VeriSign Global Registry Services. We had what was probably our last single member constituency meeting yesterday. Let me assure you, though, there were 32 people there. We weren't the only ones there. And the report that was presented in that meeting is available on the gtldregistries.org website, so I won't repeat that if you're interested in seeing that. That is basically a report, a status report of the ComNet and Org Registry. I do want to report to you that we have initiated planning. I say we. When I say we, I don't mean VeriSign. I mean the seven new registries for the new GTLDs, both sponsored and unsponsored, and VeriSign, all working together to form a multi-member constituency. And our goal is for that constituency to be organized with a proposal to the board at the June Stockholm meeting. So hopefully in June in Stockholm, we will have no longer the advantage of being always making unanimous decisions, but instead we'll be working together, and we look forward to doing that.
Okay. Thank you. Any question? ISB?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Michael Schneider. I'm chairman of the ISP constituency. We had an extremely useful meeting yesterday. First of all, we were able to deal with a couple of administrative issues that were outstanding since last year, particularly with respect to funding. I think we have now found ways to concentrate more on substance than on the questions that we have had to discuss, and the particularly funding that we have had to discuss, and that were dominating our meetings throughout last year. I would like to make you aware of three issues that we've discussed intensively. First of all, of course, the VeriSign agreement. It took most of us by surprise that this is currently underway, particularly since obviously ICANN staff is negotiating this since a couple of months. When this has been published on the ICANN websites, some of us, including myself, have been traveling, so we did not at all have the time that we would have needed to make our assessment on that. It took us also by surprise that board members that we try to ask about what their opinion on all this is and to which extent they have been involved came back to us by noticing that even they probably need to look into the agreements and the way they have been negotiated before they can give us any response. So our understanding of how we need to proceed is that we, and particularly through the Names Council this afternoon, will ask for additional time to make our assessment. A second issue that we have dealt with was who is the ISP constituency turned out to be extremely concerned about who is not only about the WHOIS report that we are still waiting for, but also about the way that WHOIS affects infrastructure providers such as ISPs and connectivity providers, liabilities that we may have to face and stuff like that. Therefore, we have set up our own working group on WHOIS that will try to compile the views on of ISPs and connectivity providers and funnel that into the task force that has been set up by the NEMS Council very recently, of which I am a member. And I think we will have a very interesting and fruitful discussion amongst ourselves, between the other members, with the other members of the NEMS Council, and with the board about how WHOIS should be treated in the future. The third point is that we have decided to offer to ICANN and the General Assembly and all those who are represented on further meetings of ICANN to provide them with info sessions on technical issues you may need some additional information about. We have just heard from the business constituency that political issues in light of technical questions and technical details may be treated in a different way than you originally may have expected. We will give you the opportunity to learn a little bit more about the most important technical issues by way of offering those info sessions. And it's most likely that the first info session, or the first series of info sessions, will take place in Stockholm. Thank you.
Any question? No. Thank you, Mike. Non-commercial constituency.
Good morning, my name is Vani Martinez, a member of the Administrative Committee of the Non-Commercial Constituency. Yesterday we held a full day meeting, and I hope that everything will be online about the meeting for today or tomorrow. Our website is Okay, so please visit the website again today and tomorrow to see all the resolutions discussed and what we approved and what we decided to put to the list. Just to be very brief, we discussed a proposal about the WHOIS, about privacy. Also, there were members that proposed that studies about abuse practices just added to the list to be discussed. Also, we have the presentation of Pindang Wong about the at-large membership committee yesterday. That's been the one first presentation. We had the request of one registrar also for to discuss and review about the new baseline contract. So the non-commercial constituency will discuss about this, of course. And well, I think that that's all for what we do today. And as a new thing we implemented in our meeting, we had some remote participation. So we transmitted the audio by internet, and some people attended it. And I hope that also other constituencies can also implement this, that the meetings can be attended also remotely. Thanks.
Thank you. Any comments? Okay. For the registrar's constituency.
Mike Palage, Secretary to the Registrar Constituency. Yesterday we had a meeting with over 20 ICANN accredited registrars in attendance. The predominant focus of yesterday's meeting was a briefing by Louis Tuton and Joe Sims with regard to an explanation of the modifications or proposed modifications to the NSI ICANN DOC documents. There is significant concern within the constituency about the renegotiations of these contracts and their impact upon stability and competition in the marketplace. There is a list of action items which ICANN accredited registrars, excluding NSI, VeriSign, have put together, but because that was not done under the guise of the constituency, this will be done at a later date. Another item which the registrars put forward, another item that the registrars put forward on their agenda was the reformation of the constituency to distribute the workload and become more proactive. This new restructuring should be in place by the June meeting in Stockholm. The final item which we dealt with was a presentation by the new TLDs, the four non-restrictive TLDs. The registrar constituency is eagerly awaiting the controlled responsible growth of the namespace as the board agreed to in last November. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No. For the trademark and intellectual property, do we have a report? No. Okay. For the CCTLD, are you going to?
Good morning. I'm Peter DeBlanc, the chair of the ADCOM and CCTLD constituency. We had a two-day meeting session. Over 50 CCTLD managers or representatives in attendance. Finishing up some old business, we have approached stabilization on a best practices document and the format and structure for the CCTLD perceived version of a contract with ICANN. For services, operation of route services, and delegations. We have achieved some consensus on a best practices document. We are working on our bylaws. And we put forth a new initiative, not new for CCTLD, but the CCTLD has been working on multilingual translations of appropriate documents so that our 240-plus members, most of whom are non-native English speakers, would have a better chance of preparing and understanding what is going on at these meetings. We did two workshops on that and a report, and we are going to make a recommendation through the normal channels that ICANN itself adopt some form of a multilingual outreach, possibly including simultaneous translation of some of the key meetings. We did some work on the Who Is database and the problem with the CCTLD is that we certainly would like the other constituencies to be aware of as a serious problem, is that the existing IANA database is somewhat outdated, does not represent the true state of who is actually operating some CCs, and in fact, there's no evidence whatsoever in the IANA database that would show that the persons who are actually operating those CCs even exist. This is not just a general problem, but a very specific problem for us in CC, because we set our voting requirements based on one vote per CC. So if we do not know who is authenticated or authorized, we have a hard time conducting our elections. The maximum penetration we've been able to achieve is about 90 emails out to these IANA database contacts, and even there some of them have bounced. We discussed financial contributions to ICANN. We have somewhat of a schism within our organization, those that feel that a proportional measure per domain name is the appropriate way to allocate the funding of approximately $1.5 million from the CCs to ICANN, and then we have those that have some other ideas. We also finished up with our usual discussion of whether ICANN should be a thin body coordinating technical things, or ICANN should be thin, thick, a policy-making body, and if thick, probably needs a little more money to adequately serve its purpose. CCs are, again, there are two camps there about equally divided. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you. So we shall go to the next sub point, which is the reports from the working groups and committees. I don't know if we have some report from the working group B. Now, in that case, we go directly to the DNSO or the View working group.
Good morning. I guess this report should be made by Greg Burton, who was elected as DNSO Review Working Group, but I don't think that he will be available for this meeting, so I will make a report as liaison named council working group review. Well, actually, the main reason the DNSO Review Working Group was started was everybody realized working group is not working because we have had since San Jose INN meeting, we have had six working groups, including DNSO review. But if we see the whole result of the working group, I don't think everybody is happy about the result because the working group A's result was UDIP, which was very hurriedly wrapped up without full discussion and then just finalized as a small drafting committee. Which really couldn't get enough input regarding UDIP. And the second working group report was working group B, which couldn't get any consensus. And the third one was working group C, which finally come up with the consensus regarding on UGTLD. It could be number like 6 to 10, but unfortunately, Names Council could not recognize that as consensus. But later, ironically, that was recognized by the board. So finally, we could have seven UGTLD in the Marinette meeting. But regarding working group D and working group E, which has been very suspended for a while, for example, working group E's report was available since last year, but it could not be fully discussed even in the Names Council because of lack of interest. So. When I first joined this ICANN process, that was my expectation regarding bottom-up process, but it is very hard to see where we can see bottom-up process. That was whole intention to review how can we make DNSO work out. So that was the first step. The second step was constituency. And whenever we have this constituency report from the each seven constituency, we really hardly see, excuse me, the position from each constituency. Usually they can make a report. We have discussed this and this, but because of a lot of different layers of perspectives from globally, maybe because of the conflicts of interest, it is almost impossible to reach a consensus or reach some kind of position paper. So for example, even though you can get a consensus in the physical meeting, when you go back to the online to more than like 200 members, well, like in non-commercial constituency, it's almost impossible to reach consensus. So we really need to figure out what kind of process we need to come to figure out what could be the consensus, what could be the position paper from each constituency. And another thing is General Assembly. We are having General Assembly here, but I don't think anybody could expect some real substantial discussion or substantial action plan. I'm so sorry to say this to Roberto, but I mean that's been sort of status quo of General Assembly since I think it's almost the early history of the NSO. So we still felt like very frustrated, and everybody here tried to figure out the answers, but actually it has been very, very difficult. So when the DNSO review working group was finally started, after a lot of discussions whether we need that working group, because working group couldn't be functional that way effectively, but it finally it was recognized by the Names Council last December 19th. So the initial date was December 23rd. And at that time, we could have around like more than 100 people for the first day. And then within a week, we could have almost 150 people. But I guess most participants from ALAS members at the first phase, so they really could not deal the issues properly. And then there have been very continuous new additional members, and there is some withdrawals from the membership. So continuously, the members were around 120 or so, and they really discussed contentiously how can we improve DNSO process. And the almost the first consensus was about the constituency is not working properly. And so there could be two ways to improve DNSO constituency. The first proposal was maybe we don't need any constituency structure because it's not working. That was quite extreme. But the second proposal was if we try to keep this constituency structure, maybe we need some balance because the whole decision-making process seems to stop with Names Council at some level. But in the Names Council, the whole decision made by the voting process. But the voting is always stuck because the whole commercial block and some non-commercial and CCTLD, they do have their very individual positions. So to improve that kind of decision-making process, I think the balanced constituency structure was needed, and that has been reported as a sort of preliminary report on January 15th, requested by the Names Council. So another thing is, this whole working group can be controlled by Names Council. So Names Council is the one who can create the name, working group, well, so far in this structure, and Names Council is the one who can shut down the working group. And there have been a lot of imbalances among the working group too, because if we see the whole working group's history, and from working group A to E, we see has been initially made up, I think, San Jose INN meeting that was 1999 June. And then since then, some working group has done their work and completed their working group schedule. But for example, there are still, we have working group D and working group E, which couldn't even be finalized properly because of lack of interest from the Names Council. But there have been a lot of requests from the working group review. We need more time to come up with the substantial recommendation, but which couldn't be done properly because they think they don't need more time to review. And that should, because of is pressure time frame requested by the board. But there have been quite a very inconsistent the communication between the board and between the Names Council and all those different layers of group, because when we see the board responses that directly, they seem to be quite tied up with a lot of different issues, such as very science contract and new GTLD negotiation. But so I realized they even don't have any passion about the DNSO review from their perspective, because they have a lot of decisions they have to make up for this novel meeting. So DNSO review might be stuck at some point at this moment, but this is the status so far. So technically, this working group review has been shut down by Names Council since last Names teleconference. But fortunately, there have been a lot of passionate working group members who are still working hard in the online. So I hope they can come up with some substantial recommendations. And there have been already a lot of recommendations here and there, but the only process we have left is, can we get or reach the consensus which has been described in the white paper? And so that goes to the through constituency or Means Council. So finally, that can reach to board. So board can decide according to the bottom of consensus. And that's been whole intention of the NSA review. But I think to have enough and the full range of review process, I personally would recommend as Names Council Liaison Working Group Review Chair, this group need more time, probably to have more substantial conclusion. This group should have more time until Stockholm meeting.
Thank you. Any question or comment on this? I would like to clarify that we will have explicitly a point in the agenda to discuss the DNSO review if you have contribution to give to the DNSO review. So I would like to take now just questions for clarification or short comments, but not open the debate on this, postpone this to a later point in the agenda. Yes, Philip.
Philip Shepherd, speaking in my capacity as chair of the Names Council. Really, just a question, just clarification on the process. We heard earlier from YJ, one member of a 19-member Names Council, expressing some concern about the way, in general, that working groups have operated. I believe YJ's sentiment is shared by every member of the 19-member Names Council, and we all believe that the past means of outreach has been, let me just say, suboptimal. And we're all working to improve that. In terms of next steps, what we're planning on doing, we're very conscious of moving forward, and we want to move on from the discussion as to what is broke to the implementation so that we can do the fix. And my analysis, really, of the original Names Council task force, in which we wanted contributory comments, that we outreach to constituencies, and subsequently with the working group, is really an elaborate list of what is broke, and we want to move on rapidly with that, and that's the reason the Names Council has imposed some rather tight and challenging timelines on the review process so far, because we're keen to get on and act, and that is part of the discussions that we'll be having in the formulation of a business plan for the NC discussions this afternoon.
Thank you. Any other comment on this? Okay. As I said, we will be reopening the discussion on the DNSO review and specifically also the role of the GA later on. Okay. Please do.
Thank you very much, and I apologize for my late arrival. I'm Steve Metallitz, the president of the Intellectual Property Constituency, and I can just briefly report on our meeting yesterday. We had a very full agenda, including a number of internal matters regarding improvement of our website and outreach, but I do want to mention in particular two or three issues which we discussed. The first was the status of negotiations with the new top-level domain registries. I think the consensus was that we had had there had been some very fruitful discussions and some significant improvements from our perspective in the proposals made by a number of the new TLD registries. However, we at this point still don't know the full picture of what many of these registries are proposing with regard to protection of intellectual property interests and other matters of great concern to our constituency. So we will be studying quite closely the various appendices to the agreements as they are posted on the ICANN website. We also had a presentation jointly with the business constituency, and perhaps they've already mentioned this, from a couple of the new TLD registries, which I thought was quite informative about how they were planning, in the case of .biz and .pro, to address some of these issues. We also had a discussion of a number of the issues that will be discussed today and in the public forum, and I believe by the board, including the internationalized domain names, the DNSR review, proposed revisions to the VeriSign agreements. We had a short colloquy with some VeriSign representatives as far as that is concerned, and I think one issue that emerged there is that in order to be able to evaluate these proposed agreements, we would need to know more about how the proposal by VeriSign to invest more in .com, the $200 million figure that has been used, how would that investment be directed, and to what extent would it be used to increase the accountability and transparency of registrations in .com. So we would hope to get more information about that over the next couple of days so that we can more comprehensively evaluate these agreements. The final point I wanted to mention is that we had a briefing from the CCTLD constituency, which I thought was quite informative and I think provoked some good discussion about how the intellectual property constituency should be working with the CCTLDs and with that constituency to try to exchange views and perhaps give some suggestions about elements of the best practices that I know that they are working on. This is for us an extremely important part of the ICANN world, if you will, and one where I think we need to step up our efforts to improve communication with the CCTLDs and to try to present our perspectives more effectively and more consistently. So I did want to highlight that. I thought it was one of the highlights of our meeting yesterday afternoon. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions on this and clarification? No. Thank you. If there's still no report from Working Group D, I would like to move to the next point in the agenda and discuss about the election of the chairman of the General Assembly. As you all know, my term has expired. There have been discussions going on about the new elections, how we are going to deal with this. I just remind that historically the process was defined in a moment in which it was not clear what the GA would have become with time. So we had certain procedures that we need to review in one way or the other. In fact, to change the rules of the game at the moment when an election is ongoing seemed not the best way to deal with the matter. So still pending the request that the GA had also formally in Marina del Rey about the change in the bylaws that will allow the General Assembly to elect its its chairman and not via the name council, but directly. So pending this, that we will, which is an issue that we will rehash in the future, we are just going on with a two-step election and the ratification from the name council as by the current bylaws. And I would like to give the floor to Elizabeth that will describe a little bit the deadlines and the modality, the practical modalities of this election. One important point that I want to make is that, which is probably a new thing versus the way we held the nomination process and the elections last time, is that we now have an official GA voting registry. So it is absolutely important that whoever wants to participate in this election and generally in the activities of the General Assembly subscribe to the voting registry, because the biggest problem that we have, and we have had this also as I pointed out in some previous meeting, we have difficulties in identifying the people that participate to the nomination process, also for the for the directors, for the DNSO directors. So we have difficulties in knowing who is qualified as a member of the General Assembly and not. So it is very important that that people subscribe to this to the GA registry. It's some kind of process that is done in every time that in most countries where you have elections, you have to register to vote, and that's something that that we need in order to ensure the transparency and of the process. So, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Roberto. I wish to re-stress and to what Roberto just said, and to call everybody to register to this voting registry. The definition of General Assembly of the DNSO is are members of General Assembly, members of all constituencies, as well as those who subscribe to mailing list, GIA, Unknowns, and or any of working groups. However, the number of persons who registered for vote was, before I leave Paris, approximately 287. It is definitely far below what we may expect from the membership of all constituents. So that is important. This year, the election of a chair, an alternate chair of General Assembly, will respect as usually ICANN bylaws, which means that the Names Council is going to have to elect the chair. But everything was set up in such a way that the General Assembly, the voting registry, has a big say. The Names Council meeting by the end of February decided to invite the General Assembly to manage an election process to select a nominee for appointment by the Names Council to the position of chair, and the requested the Secretariat to determine dates and move the process forward. These dates are as follow. On Friday, 16th of March, the call for nomination will be issued. It will be open 1 week. On Friday, 23rd of March, the call for endorsement will be issued, still open for 1 week. On Friday, 30th of March, the list of candidates will be closed. This is the first part of election process. Then we are going to have those who registered to voting registry of General Assembly, these people voting and to rank the candidates using single transferable vote. It will start on Saturday, 31st of March, and it will last 1 week. And the process will be, the details will be provided shortly, and it will be each member of voting registry will receive a personalized ballot with the list of candidate and will have to reply to that ballot to the email address provided by the secretariat. On Sunday, 8 April, the results will be calculated, and the next names council, which is scheduled for Tuesday, 10 April, will elect the chair and alternate chair from the candidates ranked by the General Assembly. I believe we have it. I encourage everybody to register to voting registry.
Okay. Any comment on this? Any point that you want to discuss about the elections of the chair? Yes, please.
Hello, everybody. Sébastien Bachelet from CIGREF France. Just one question. Why the list of the voters couldn't be fulfilled with the member of the constituency and not asking the member of the constituency to relist in another list this one to vote? Because if it's the General Assembly, we already have in each constituency one list of people and we can inform them.
Very good question. The problem is that not all constituencies have a complete list of members. So this is exactly the point. When we hit that problem when we had the nomination for the candidates for the ICANN board from the DNSO. And we had severe difficulties in the secretariat to find out if somebody was part of a constituency or not, because, as I said, not all the constituencies have an official list. And so we were forced to have this additional step. I don't. I mean, we could use the list for those who do have the list. I personally don't think that it is a dramatic problem to subscribe to the registry. Frankly, so very very openly, each of one of us is probably subscribed to dozens of mailing lists. I don't think that that it is a real political problem to subscribe to one more. But we could consider this. If we have an official communication by a constituency that asks that provides us a full list of people and saying those are the members of the constituency, I don't think that administratively there will be any problem in adding those people automatically to the voting registry. The point is is the fact that most constituencies don't have that list.
If you wish that your constituency prefer proceed this way, please contact the secretariat and we will try to add all the lists you have to voting registry. But the problem we had that some constituency were claiming that the members of constituency are members of all organizations belonging to constituency. And in such a situation, simply there is no limit. And we need to have electorate well established to have something really well defined.
But anyway, I don't think that there's any problem in accepting a list from a constituency that has the names and email addresses, of course. But probably in practice, what we will do is that we will add those people to the voting registry, and that's it.
We may proceed this way, actually. The list of member of constituency shall be known prior to the beginning of vote, so it shall be provided to the secretariat no later than Friday 16th.
Well, but we again. Yes, the question, the comment was on the website of the business constituency. We have a list of the members. Okay. Yes. Can I? I will just answer to this, and then. Anyway, I don't. I say again, we don't have any problem. You just give us an or tell us to use the list that you have at the website. But what we cannot do is to take a list of organization and assume that everybody that is working for those organization is automatically a member of the General Assembly. That's just the point of identification of people. We have. We have organizations with more than 100,000 employees or members that we cannot automatically accept just based on the word of one person. So, I mean, we all have one case in mind, and I think that that this can apply to any kind of organization. But anyway, whatever can help, I mean, there's no problem in once we have a list and once we have been given this as the official list of the members of a constituency, provided that we are talking about individuals and we're not talking about organizations, then we can add that to the voting roster, and that's it, of course. If we have a simple solution, then there's no problem.
It is much better that Secretariat of Constituency provides such a list, because it is very difficult from Secretariat of DNSO position to just browse website and figure out what is correct. You know much better who are members of your constituency.
Okay, we have a comment from.
Sotiris Soteropoulos asks, how will the NC choose from the ranked candidates, specifically process?
This is a question that has to be asked to the main council. I don't think I have the answer. Philip.
Let me give an answer by way of analogy. Philip Shepherd, Names Council Chair. In the United Kingdom, we have a constitutional monarchy and we have a process of democracy and elections. So far, when a party has got the majority of the votes, the monarch of the country has then chosen the winning party to form a government. I'm not aware in recent history
of the loser of the election being chosen to form a government, and I regard the role of the NC to be similar in this regard.
Thank you, Philip. Any other question? There was a question before. Yes. Can you please speak at the microphone so that it's webcast? Anybody that has a question, you can already start to line up at the microphone if you want.
My name is Patrick Corliss. I'm a member of the board of ADA. I've just been following the minutes as they're appearing on the screen in front of us. To a certain extent, I think the minutes have very accurately reflected what's been said, but I'm not sure that it's entirely accurate always. It's given the suggestion there that Roberto was suggesting there was a possibility of fraud as far as the stacking of the electorate. I don't know that Roberto ever mentioned the word fraud. What he did say was that it would be against the integrity of the voting list to accept a number of members on the say-so of one person. That's not quite the same thing. It's talking about the integrity of the list rather than any potential for fraud. I don't know if you want to clarify that particular issue.
Yeah, thank you for the comment. But it's true that I never mentioned the word fraud, but on the other hand, I have to admit that if we don't keep the situation under control, there's even the possibility of a fraud. I think that I'm reasonably, I'm always happy about the way the minutes are written, considering also the difficult circumstances of making notes in real time. But I appreciate the comment, and I see that the minutes have been already corrected. Any other comment on this subject? Anybody wants to propose his or her candidature? Well, it's an exciting job to be GA chairman. Okay. No other comments from outside on this subject? Okay. I would like to open the discussion on the DNSO review, and there are some specific things of the DNSO review that directly touch the General Assembly. As YJ has noted in her presentation, there are in fact a lot of shortcoming, to speak by the General Assembly. I don't think that we have during this year under my chairmanship that we were able to fulfill all the expectations that that people had about the General Assembly. I did my best. Obviously, the job could have been done better. I think that now we are going to turn the page. We are going to have a new chairman in 1 month or so, and hopefully some new people with new ideas and a new and fresh enthusiasm will be able to get also some better results. In the meantime, I really think that it is part of the DNSO review
also to critically review what the General Assembly has done and what the General Assembly has not done and what should have done. So, and also what we can do in the near future in order to have a more active participation in the General Assembly and to have some better outcome from the General Assembly process that can be useful in general for the internal life of ICANN. And I think that this is a kind of an interesting topic. And so I would like to open the floor for a discussion on the DNSO review by keeping in mind that if possible, I would like to have the major focus on what the General Assembly should do in the future and in order to be more more effective. So anybody want to comment on this? I encourage people that have comments to come down already and line up at the microphone so that...
Yeah. My name is Danny Younger. I started out as a participant in the review working group a few months ago, and like many of us, continue to the end. In this process, we've worked hard. We've taken our mandate seriously. We are looking at the problems. We are coming up with solutions. To summarize briefly, the review working group has come to the conclusion that yes, there are serious problems, and that there are ultimately two approaches that can be taken to address those problems. The first proposal was actually put on the table by Carl Auerbach, a proposal recommending the abolition of the constituency structure, rolling the constituencies back into the General Assembly. The second possibility was to increase representation by alternately adding additional constituencies. We came to the conclusion that there are a number of possible constituencies that may work well in the mix. Individuals commented on the possibility of an individual's constituency, a constituency for small business, perhaps a constituency for public policy groups, a constituency for end users. A number of proposals were put forth. We have not yet come to consensus because of certain restrictions placed on the working group by the Names Council with regard to our time frame. But we have come to certain interesting conclusions. One of the most interesting proposals directly affects the General Assembly in that it was proposed that the General Assembly itself become a constituency. What's fascinating about this particular proposal is that unlike the back and forth arguments that developed over every single topic in the course of the last 2-3 months, there was no opposition to this concept within the context of the review working group. That's a brief summary.
Thank you. Other comments? Okay, I think, Ben, anything from outside? Okay, so we can move to the next point, which is the individuals. This is somehow linked to the DNSO review, but I thought it was fair to have that as a separate point, as a specific point, because this has been the role of individuals is something that has been floating around since the beginning of the DNSO, and I consider one of the major failures of the DNSO the inability to give to provide an answer to this question and to have the participation from individual users and from individual domain name holders, and I think that it is one issue that we have to be able to solve in the near future, and too much time has been going on without being able to provide an answer to this. So this said, I would like to open the floor for a debate and proposal on. I would particularly welcome proposals on how to progress on this, and how to proceed to the foundation of a constituency that that is focusing specifically at individual users and individual domain name holders. Anybody wants to take the floor? I don't know why, but I thought you may want to intervene on this.
I'm Joop Tierenstra. I have been a member of the working group from the beginning. I was one of the early proposers. I actually even requested all activity on the ITNO discuss list to stop to pay attention to the working group, because we considered it so important to give our early inputs, so that even with a very short deadline of, you know, 15th of February, we were able to get our thoughts in. And so our thoughts have been reported to the Men's Council, and especially the idea of abolishing the constituencies, which is a very radical proposal, has been noted, duly noted, I'm sure, by the Men's Council. My own contribution to the working group was a proposal to not abolish the constituencies, and to try to work with the existing ones, but to add new ones, to bring about a balance of interests. On the one hand, the registry and registrar industry, and on the other hand, the domain name owners. Both business, both non-commercial and individual. The fact that there is such a thing as an individual domain is a unique property of the internet. And legally, such a thing didn't exist before, and so it has created all sorts of collisions. But it has given—it's the greatest promise of the internet—that it gives the individuals a personal presence on the net, and that presence is only safeguarded as a domain name. And so, as a result, the registries have recorded large percentages of registrants that are not businesses or organizations, but individuals. And these individuals could have all sorts of intentions. Some will have small companies, some will have hobbies, some will have political activism. But all of these will be individual activities with very typical needs and perhaps requirements for regulation. And the DNSO of the future, the way I've seen it and the way I felt that I can promise it, was a DNSO which would really give balanced input to the ICANN board for decisions. And the almost universal opinion of the working group that the DNSO has failed, it has been dysfunctional, has been bypassed now in the latest round of decision making by the board, all that shows that we must do something about the DNSO or we will lose it, and it will be bypassed, routed around by the board and by the individual domain name owners. I think it's vital that the individual domain name owners will stay with ICANN and will keep their hope focused on ICANN, because the alternative is pretty frightening. It's as the alternative I see an internet of robber barons that will own chunks of TLD space and will dictate and do whatever they like within that space. There will be no controlling authority at all. So anyone who thinks now that he would be wise putting his money or to buy his domain name in one of these, let's say, underground spaces, will be at the mercy of the lords who will rule that underground. And it's simply a matter of money. At the moment, we've actually seen already the first gathering of momentum because money has been thrown after the alternative. And so the people that have predicted a revolution in the namespace are, I think, going to be proven right. And so I think ICANN has been very slow and very late to recognize the danger and to recognize the role of the individuals in this whole thing. And I think it's high time that the DNSO does something about taking individual interests into account and make it part of the representation structure. There was a third proposal coming out from the working group that was, I think, not reflected in the report to the Names Council. And that is to make the GA into a constituency. Now, Elizabeth and Roberto have told us that there is, yes, a mailing list, a finite mailing list, and a voter's roll. It means we are as identifiable as any other grouping that is a constituency and that can form itself as a constituency. The GA is now no different than the IDNO that simply has a list of some 15 members with email addresses that they can personally address and poll for their opinions. And this can be repeated in just the same way for the General Assembly. And it will be less radical than an individual's constituency because the General Assembly also consists of all the other constituencies and they will have all opportunity to have their input, and actually they have most of their input. So it would be a very small and non-revolutionary step to make the GA into a constituency and let it simply elect its own three representatives. That was not my proposal, but it was a proposal by the elected chair, building on the thoughts of others that have been really thoughtful with their contributions in the working group. So I would like the meeting to consider this option. And I'll open it for debate.
Thank you. Any other comment on this? I would like to briefly address the point made by you. I think that in the past we have excluded this possibility because the General Assembly, we're thinking about the General Assembly,
as a place where all the constituencies were coming together and debating common issues more than having a focus that was specifically on people that were not part of the constituencies, even if I have always stated that it was my intention as a chairman to make sure that the people that don't have otherwise a voice in the constituency system will be able to express themselves in the General Assembly, and so therefore to give some kind of priority to this. But I think that the situation has evolved in the last months, since the beginning of the General Assembly 1.5 years ago. And I think that the proposal that you just presented starts having more sense if we think that now the constituency systems that was built at one time was intended to kind of partition the different entities and allocate them in specific constituencies that were in the beginning thought like independent groups. Now we see more and more have non-void intersections between constituencies. Now with the fact that we have seen that some companies will act as registries and registrars, that will mean that one company will be in two constituencies that were thought up to now to be completely separate. So therefore to have a constituency like the General Assembly that has as members also people that may be members of other constituencies is less of an heretic approach than it could have been 2 years ago when we were in the foundation phase. So, this proposal has the merit of being simple and of addressing directly this and to find a place for the individuals without having to go through revolutionary things. So maybe we can bring this up on the mailing list and continue discussing on this basis. I think that it may be a solution. I mean, for the time being, and then in the future we will see. I have Chuck Gomes and then comments from outside.
Having watched this debate and this interest for an individual constituency, one of my observations is that there doesn't seem to be a good understanding of what the bylaws allow for with regard to adding constituencies. One of the basic principles is that the constituencies self-organize. And if they can't self-organize, I'm not sure they're going to be effective constituency. One of the observations I've had is that there seems to be a waiting for the Names Council or the board to do something to make this happen. In my understanding of the bylaws, what needs to happen is those who are interested in an individual domain name holder's constituency need to organize themselves and present a viable proposal for that constituency to the Names Council and then on to the board. Now, I understand that the first proposal was rejected, and I can't, it's not my place to talk about that, but instead of waiting for the Names Council and the board to take action on this, it seems to me that a viable plan for a constituency needs to be put together. And I've been watching the conflict from the side with those who are interested in this constituency. And it seems to me that the challenge is to organize, and whether that's the GA as a constituency or anything else, I think a viable proposal with some people that get their heads together and come up with a plan for that to present so that the Names Council and then the board can properly evaluate that is the way to go, not to sit back and wait for the Names Council or the board to do something. The basic principle, again, is self-organization.
Thank you. Do we have any...
Can...
May I repeat the comment because it was not on, said on the microphone? You said that the initial petition was not rejected by the board, was not taken into consideration. Yeah.
Kendall Dawson asks, when will the GA ask for a time schedule regarding the actual creation of an individual's constituency?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but let me answer this way. I fully agree with Chuck and what he said, that there's nothing we can do in terms of pushing the name council or the ICANN board to do things if we are not if there's no self-organizing effort by the individuals or whoever wants to create a new constituency. So I think that it's not a task of the GA to present a time schedule. I think that the effort has to be put in place by the people that want to organize the this constituency, and so some coalition of groups have to come up with an agreed timetable, and then the GA can support this and can provide also the administrative infrastructure if needed. But I don't think that. That it will be fair that the General Assembly takes the lead on this and pushes the other bodies to do something in absence of a self-organizing effort. Now, if we want to take the route of asking recognition for the General Assembly as the 8th constituency, that's a different thing. But we are not at the stage right now where this can be even thought as a consensus proposal. I mean, even if it has it doesn't have opposition in the DNSO review working group, I think that it needs full discussion on the GA list and some kind of more in-depth. And then we can think of a time frame in which to propose this to the name council and to the ICANN board. But in itself, in lack of progress of self-organizing, of progress in self-organizing of the individual constituency, there's no timetable that the GA can give. Any other comments? I in that case I will give a comment myself. I think that it is. What Chuck has said reminds me a little bit of the history of the DNSO when we went through different debates, and at one point in time we were even thinking that the DNSO would have been a more dynamic structure that. In a situation in which things evolve and
new business are created, new opportunities, new group coalesce and are created and die. We were thinking that probably the DNSO would have been all this constituency structure would have been a little bit more dynamic, with the possibility of creating new constituencies and discontinuing some constituencies that that did not make sense. At one point in time, there was even the so-called Paris draft, which was even trying to put this black on white, to give rules for the creation. And now that was rejected at that time, because we needed a kind of fixed platform to start building upon. But I think that this is not just the point of the individual constituency, even if this is the greatest, the most evident it's the most obvious lack of representativity in the DNSO structure. But anyway, I still believe that that in the future, as the situation evolves, there will be the need to modify the constituency structure to give the possibility to other self-organized group to be created. And I think that this has to be generally taken into account. There are some people that are thinking about those lines, and we'll see what will happen in the future. Any other comment on this?
Perhaps you could give a very brief overview of how far IDNO is self-organized and
just speak at the microphone.
The IDNO still has the structure that makes it into a proper framework for the constituency. It has a mailing list, an announce list, archived. It has a structure for an executive committee, a polling committee to agree on the correct and the fair questions to ask the membership for polling and voting. A membership committee and a website content committee, because there has been early on an attempt at capture both the mailing list, the website, and the polling booth. Because, of course, when a constituency or any organization starts forming like that, it's in the bootstrap phase, and it has no rules by which it operates, and the charter is not yet endorsed by the members. It's of course very, very open to capture, and so this is the very first thing that we saw on our mailing list within the first week. And I think most of the people who have been involved in the mailing lists around ICANN for a long time know that these attempts at capture have been made on almost all mailing lists. It is very easy to capture a mailing list in the sense that all you need to do is put two people on it who have the whole day to post and to immediately cut off everything constructive that is being started. It becomes, people will be very rapidly be discouraged, and serious people who want to give their time, professional people, lawyers, ex-administrators, retired government officials, they see this nonsense and they simply unsubscribe and they leave the list. And this is how the GA has lost list members as well. And we have seen this on all lists. There is such a thing as verbal terrorism, and this is being practiced to a fine art by people who either do this because they enjoy it or somebody pays them to do it. I don't know. But anyway, the IDNO has become a victim to that. And this is a very good lesson for all self-organizing forms, because the GA is not safe from this either. And I think we all have to think together in how to make the output of a mailing list representative of the people who are subscribed to it, and not representative of three or four people who dominate the discussions at all costs. So, as a result of the IDNO elected at first its first steering committee. We gave it a 3-month mandate because they were all untried and untested people. Nobody knew them. Nobody knew who they represented really or what agenda they had. So they had to just be there as open as possible and show what they were worth to see if they could be elected by the for a longer term by the membership. And what happened in the first steering committee was that two people or three people who had hopes of capturing the steering committee and then perpetuating it simply started to take a position that became more and more personal against everybody who opposed them. And the result was that in the end, from a steering committee of 21 people, five people were left. And in the end, the last three, the determined three, simply started to make edicts and carry out orders to the General Assembly while they had no longer a quorum. So, because there was no rule about quorum, the charter hadn't been approved yet. This was, there was nothing that said that could not be done. So the discussion had been taken back to the General Assembly of the IDNO, and there it managed to come to a re-railing proposal. It was without steering committee at that point, the term had expired, and it created a charter committee, it elected the charter committee to work on the charter as the highest priority, so that at least there would be rules by which people would live by. And this actually succeeded. It took about 3 months. And a charter came out that took all the previous fights into account, to try to make rules and how to deal with them when they would occur again. And generally use cyberspace facilities for the procedures. So we had the website polling booth. It's a very important tool in polling what the members really want and which direction they want to go. What happened was that under the charter, a new executive committee was elected. And this was elected and took its seat. A chair for the General Assembly was elected and took his seat. And we started constructive work. Not a week or two had passed, or the same people who had voted against the charter, these three people, started to spend all their energy online to make life impossible to both the chair and the elected executive committee. So as a result, these people are all volunteers. They simply left, they resigned, the whole executive committee resigned, because they started ridiculous procedures about forcing them to open their mailing list to the General Assembly, and starting to claim that they were acting against the interests of the IDNO, and should be ejected as members. Well, if you have an elected steering committee or an elected executive committee, and there is a call for their not only resignation but ejection as a member, then you get chaos. And so, this is where the IDNO stands now. I myself pulled back from any active role. I was an elected spokesman, one of the three. And I said, okay, I will just step back and I will cease posting to the IDNO discuss list and see what happens. This is a problem that will exist with the General Assembly too, unless firm rules are made that make sure that the sound on the mailing list is more or less the sound of the real mind of the members, of the majority of the members.
Okay, thank you. Peter.
Peter DeBlanc, CCTLD constituency. This may be a little bit off the point of the individual domain name holders, but since the subject of the mailing list was brought up, I, as most of you, have been exposed and attempted to participate in the mailing list. We are now talking about some method of authenticating voters or certifying voters or who is allowed to vote and so forth. And we do have, we have experimented with methods of list moderators who, under a certain set of circumstances, can suspend someone's posting rights. I would suggest that we have some type of best practices for mailing lists, and at the time we are authenticating and certifying those who are authorized to vote on the GAA, or for that matter any other list, that we proactively request the person subscribing and being authorized to vote that they sign up to some tenets of conduct on the mailing list in order to ensure that it is kept impersonal, to the point of business and so forth. And much as I do not like to disenfranchise anyone, I would suggest that we consider a set of sanctions if the conduct of the person on the list is not properly maintained. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's another remote comment.
Yes.
Daryl Lynch comments, it is all right for constituencies to be self-forming, but when submissions are rejected without full explanations and there are not specific guidelines for potential constituencies to follow in making a submission, it is very difficult. Are there plans to produce a series of guidelines for the formation of potential constituency submissions? And if in the future proposals are made to form new constituencies, what will be the basis for any approval or disapproval?
Well, there are two parts, two separate questions that I see. First of all, I don't think. Well, the guidelines for new constituencies to be approved or rejected is this part of the comment. I don't think that that I have any answer to this, because it's not in the role of the General Assembly. But on the other hand, for the problem addressed in the first part of the question, I would only make a remark that ICANN has campaigned for the at-large membership, and in very few months we had tens of thousands of people subscribing for becoming an at-large member. Those are, to the best of my knowledge, were mostly individuals. They were not people that were just obeying some direction from corporations, or so those in the vast majority were individuals that were interested in participating in the ICANN process. If we are going to really address the point of having individuals participating in the DNSO, we have to come up with some kind of proposal that is interesting for those individuals, and to have participation of the order of magnitude of those numbers. And I don't think that anything less than that will be taken into account by the Name Council or the ICANN board in terms of creating a constituency. So the problem is that we have to somehow make a proposal that has a more solid basis of consensus that the proposals that have been done
so far. This is, of course, it's just my personal opinion. It's not... Philip.
Roberto, thank you. We had a brief discussion on one of our sort of planning committees in the Names Council on precisely the point that Darrell Lynch raises. And one of the action items that's within our business plan that I'll be recommending for adoption by the Names Council this afternoon is indeed a point about new constituencies. And I'll just read the text here. Clarify the process for the creation of new constituencies and recommend to the NC a set of test criteria, which may include need, uniqueness, potential contribution, and representativeness. So this is like helping to lead on from where the bylaws leave us to help with that process, and in particular, not only the process also, but the distinctiveness that will be part of anything new formed.
Thank you. The question was, will the existing constituency be required to follow the same criteria?
It would be a very interesting test, I agree.
Roberto, David Johnson, I'd just like to read the section of the bylaws that relates to new constituencies so that people can have it in mind when they consider what to say to the board about this. It says, any group of individuals or entities may petition the board for recognition as a new or separate constituency. Any such petition will be posted for public comment. But it goes on to say, the board may create new constituencies in response to such a petition or on its own motion if it determines that such action would serve the purposes of the corporation. I think it would be a mistake if people thought that there must be a consensus in anybody before the board were to conclude that it is in the interest of ICANN to make sure that those who are being asked to pay a fee and who hold domain names subject to the policies established by ICANN ought to have a place to come and represent their views. Obviously, as Chuck said, it would be best if some concerted group that wants to make such a body work were to come forward and petition, but that is not required, and the board has the power to act at any time to create in the DNSO structure a place that the very existence of which invites people to come forward.
Thank you. Any other comments on the subject? Nothing from remote? Okay, we are getting into any other business. As I mentioned before, there are at least a couple of events in the recent times that may be worth discussing, or if somebody has some kind of comments about. The first one is, well, it's not really recent, is the multilingual testbed that's where there was a lot of discussion in Marina del Rey. And the other one was the recent announcement of the draft contract between ICANN and VeriSign that proposes a different arrangement and specifically the separation of .org in the near future, if I may just summarize in a couple of words. I'm wondering, so this second point will be definitively in the agenda in the open forum, but nevertheless, if somebody wants to make a comment or a proposal on either two, just for the purpose of keeping a little bit of order, can we start a discussion on one point at a time? And I propose to start with the multilingual. Does anybody have
a comment on the multilingual test bed, on how it's going on, and any concern. None. Okay. About the contract that between ICANN and VeriScience that changes a little bit the situation in the management of .com.org.net. Any comment on this? Elizabeth was just mentioning that probably not everybody has very clear in mind what we're talking about, because it's a recent announcement. Maybe I can ask if Chuck can volunteer at least to give some details on this. It's not an obligation, but a comment by Peter.
Peter DeBlanc, CCTLD Adcom. I'm not going to comment on the contract itself, but I will comment to the effect that a number of constituency representatives are concerned about this, and there have been some meetings, and there will be some comment and possibly some type of statement forthcoming. I'm surprised that it is not happening right now, but perhaps it's not fully formulated, but it is an issue that has captured the hearts and the minds of a lot of people.
Chuck, if you want, I can briefly summarize. My question was just to make sure that everybody understands what we are talking about. So I will give my understanding of this. My understanding is that it was planned that in more or less 1.5 years from now, the contract with NSI, now VeriSign, would have been reviewed, and the primary focus was on the separation between the registrar part from the registry part. That was considered the main condition for continuation the business of NSI. Now the proposal is somehow different. Instead of making a horizontal, I would say, split between registrar and registry, to have a vertical split and separate .com, .org, and .net, and grant the continuation of business to NSI VeriSign on .com, but go in the short term to a rebid for .org that with the target of possibly focusing a little bit better to the original scope of .org, which was the non-commercial organizations. Now, for .net, the situation will go in a time frame that in internet times doesn't make a lot of sense. Is 2007 or 2008, whatever, is 3 millennia from now in internet times. So it's basically no decision. But in the short term, this separation,
what is interesting, in my opinion, is the key in which to read this is the approach of having a vertical split instead of a horizontal split, which was the approach until 2 weeks ago.
Let me start off with a disclaimer. I was not involved in the negotiations directly, so I'm not the right spokesperson for this. But let me make a couple comments in, with regard to your request. First of all, I think that, you know, in the open forum, there will be plenty of time for comment, and you'll hear diverse viewpoints, I'm sure, and I certainly encourage you to listen to those, including statements from our CEO, Stratton Sklavos, and I believe from Joe Sims, representing ICANN. But one thing I think it's very important for everybody to understand, we are perfectly prepared, as we have stated, to go forward with the terms of the existing agreements. That's been made very clear by Stratton's letter that was posted on the ICANN website and elsewhere. And I think it's important to understand that. Realize that you know, that's fine. We're ready to do that. It has to be done shortly, but we're ready to do that. Now, another thing I want to talk about is the separation that Roberto was talking about. As compliance officer for the registry for ComNet and Org, I'm responsible for that, for the day-to-day operations of the separation, and I'm not going to go into details of that here, but I would be more than happy, anybody that has suspicions about that separation, to give you more detail in terms of what we do to ensure that separation, and we'd be glad to do that. If you look at the new agreements, all of them, including the new registry agreements, you'll find that there's similar provisions for separation between registry and registrar functions, and equivalent access requirements in there that are required of all registries. That same provision is still required of us. It doesn't change. I was actually kind of looking forward to a little bit of reduction in that requirement. It's staying intact, and so the requirements will stay the same there. But there's one thing added for our responsibility. The registrar function will have to be made a wholly owned subsidiary under the existing separation of under the organizational conflicts of interest requirements. It's not a does not have to be a wholly owned subsidiary under the past agreement, but there has to be basically a firewall put up internally within the company. That will be changed to require that the registrar be a wholly owned subsidiary. So I think it's important to understand that. But regardless, all of the organizational conflicts of interest requirements will continue to apply to us as they have in the past, and they will apply to the new registries as well.
Thank you. Any other comment on this subject?
I just wanted to touch very briefly on .org. .org has given rise to a fury of postings of comments on the ICANN site by individual .org registrants who were afraid that they might be forced to become, to turn themselves into an officially registered incorporated nonprofit organization or something like that. And there has been very few detail on future .org policies, whether if there is going to be a strictly enforced non-commercial regime, or whether all existing registrants could stay as they are in .org. And I think it might be a good idea if the General Assembly would take this up and make it into a recommendation to the Names Council to confer this to the ICANN board, that ICANN would do well in issuing some sort of guarantee that all existing registrants in .org can continue to operate as they are, whatever they are.
Thank you. I just wanted to have the opportunity to raise the concerns that have been raised, I believe, among a number of constituencies.
Can you introduce yourself for the...
Oh, I apologize. Alana Breutman from Register.com, an accredited registrar. We're also a partner in the new Registry Pro, which is one of the new TLDs. Just to raise concerns that have been raised in certainly in the registrar constituency and that I've heard echoed from a number of other constituencies. It's that this process has been sprung on us very suddenly. There's been no opportunity to provide due process and true review of what these fundamental changes in the VeriSign agreement would mean for the community and what sort of impact they will have on competition in registrars among new registries, and how that affects, indeed, the other constituencies. And there's a great deal of concern about that. There is certainly an immediate reaction that it's an unfair windfall and that it is actually going to impede competition. And that needs to be, at the very least, studied further, but it causes us great concern in going forward with these agreements right now. The other thing that I wanted to state for the record is that these new agreements, new proposed agreements, both for .com and .net, are significantly different from the new agreements that have been negotiated with the new TLDs. In fact, the new TLDs are fundamentally different from the VeriSign registries in that none of them are wholly owned by a registrar. And they, in fact, went forward based on the assumption that sort of arrangement would not be acceptable to the ICANN community, and made arrangements for their own business plans and for their own structures that would accommodate the kinds of concerns we all felt would be in among the ICANN constituencies. The new TLDs should go forward as quickly as possible. They're going to be good for competition. They're going to be good for registrars and for the reform and moving forward of the domain name system itself, and they should really be, in any kind of consideration, should really be very separate from the concerns being raised with the VeriSign agreement.
Thank you.
Just one comment. I think a correction needs to be made. If you look very closely at the .NET agreement and compare it to the new registry agreements, I don't think you'll find significant differences in those two agreements. There are more differences in the .com agreement, but not with the .NET or the .org agreements. They're very close to the new registry agreements.
My name is Marilyn Cade. I work for AT&T. I also represent the Private Sector Working Group on Trademarks and Domain Names. My observations about the proposed perhaps shift in competition, in the implementation of competition policy, is that I've had a very short amount of time to take a hard look at the existing agreement and what it provided broadly to Internet stakeholders, and to evaluate the proposed agreement. One thing I immediately note is that in the existing agreement, there is a requirement that if a unified WHOIS functionally does not emerge, that there will be some reliance on NSI to help to bring that forward based on a consensus policy recommendation from ICANN. As I look at the proposed agreement, I see that we will have, if in fact we spin off .org, and we're heavily registered in .org protectively, as many commercial providers are, not because we would have chose to do that. We would have loved to have seen .org remain a non-commercial space. We're heavily registered in .net, and we're fairly heavily registered in .com, as well as in many of the CCTLDs. If we spin .org, then we'll have a new and separate who is for .org. We'll have a new and separate who is for .net, and we'll have a continued who is for .com. And I see no advantage yet to the network operators, ISPs, and trademark and business users who are already sort of stumbling about trying to check everyone's who is, some of which are not consistent, some of which don't have correct data in them yet. I know you did notice I say yet. I'm hopeful. And so I think I need more time of some kind to assess what some of these implications will be.
Thank you. Any other comment? Okay, is there any other subject that should have been brought up and we didn't? Well, this being not the case, I think we can rapidly go to a close. Let me just thank the hosts of this meeting, and I think it has been very, very nice so far. I would like also to thank also in this circumstances the Merkel Foundation that has funded some of the trips of the people, especially from the non-commercial constituency, that were unable to come on their own money, and this has been managed by the Salzburg Seminar. Will be my last physical meeting, GA meeting as a chairman. Thank you. Thank you very much. I hope that we can rapidly elect a new chairman, and I hope that based on what we have been doing so far, this new chairman will be able to bring the General Assembly to a better results and be able to do the things that were on my wish list when I took office and I didn't manage to bring to completion. So thank you everybody for coming. The main council, what time is the main council?
Their agenda says 2:00. We heard 1:30, so we're not quite sure.
Yeah, that's why I was asking, because there was this misunderstanding about the GA. I wanted to make sure that we don't have the same misunderstanding for the name council. What schedule do you have? 2:00, huh?
Yeah, the schedule is 2:00. The names council will start at 2 p.m. Thank you.
Okay. Have a good lunch.
up this meeting of the Names Council. In 2 seconds, I'm going to go around the table and ask Names Council members to make their name known, and also please to tell us if you're holding any proxies. Just before I do that, a word in terms of the nature of this meeting. We've had the whole of today is sort of DNSO meetings. We had the GA this morning, which was really the major element in terms of public comment and contribution. Technically, this meeting of the Names Council is an observed meeting. However, what I would like to do, if we're able to get through our agenda in time, is at the end of the session, if any issues have come up or any new issues have come up that people would like to comment on, is then to have a public comment period at the end of the meeting. So I will work my time management to that end. So let's start the meeting by introductions, and perhaps Peter, you could start at that end.
Good afternoon. Peter LeBlanc, administrative.vi, member of the CCTLD constituency and chairman of the administrative committee of the CCTLD.
Good afternoon. Elisabeth Courteneuve from AFNIC, French Registry, CCTLD Names Council delegate.
Oscar Robles, administrative contact for .mx and CCTLD constituency representative.
Guillermo Carey from the intellectual property constituency. I'm holding proxy for Axel and Caroline Chicoin.
YJ Park from non-commercial domain holders constituency representing Asia Pacific Networking Group, and I'm having also proxy for Milton Mueller.
Fanny Martinez from SDMT Panama, representative of the non-commercial constituency at the Names Council.
Paul Kane, a representative of the registrar's constituency.
Ken Stubbs, representing the registrar's constituency.
And Erica Roberts, representing the registrar's constituency.
Hirohota from ISPCP.
Tony Harris, ISPCP.
Graf Asayath, representative of business constituency.
And Patricia Swinehart, business constituency.
Philip Shepherd, also member of the business constituency, and chairing this meeting. Thank you, everybody. Item one is approval of the agenda. From the agenda that was sent out to you earlier, you should also have seen some additions to that. They appear on the recent version that's been produced today. And under any other business, I'm planning on taking four items. That to do with the VeriSign agreement, new registry contracts, non-ICANN TLDs, and I think we had a request also from Pinder Wong, if he's here, to make a quick comment on the at-large evaluation process. And after that, we'll go to public comments if we have time. Is everybody happy with that agenda? Thank you very much. We're going to move straight on to what's going to be a fair chunk of the meeting, and this is discussing the Names Council business plan. Now, as you're aware, we decided a few meetings ago upon the concept of a business plan as helping us map out what we wanted to do over the next 2 years. And we set up a task force comprising one representative from each constituency to propose that plan. The first thing they did was think of what the structure of such a plan should be with its objectives and strategies. They made a top-line mission statement and a set of just fairly simple objectives. And this was circulated to constituencies and a comment period took place then with constituencies. That resulted in some quite good feedback. And subsequently, we had a new drafting session within that task force. And the current version you see before you, which is version 7, is what we now have today. And the proposal after discussion on this, and indeed any amendment, would be that we today formally adopt this plan, which has a whole series of activities in it, which will implement the items that are there. As you will see from the agenda, there are essentially sort of eight main areas, eight key objectives within the plan. And I'm going to ask individuals, if they would, to lead the topic on those, really.
just to get us up to speed with what that issue is and what we're planning on doing in the plan to carry that out. And then we'll discuss each of those, agree to what has been suggested by the task force as to the way we do that, and then go on to the next one. So.
Excuse me, point of order. I think we need to acknowledge another member joining us.
Indeed, Roger. Thank you very much. Especially if you just introduce yourself, everybody else has done so.
I'm Roger Cochetti with the GTLD, representing the GTLD constituency.
Thank you. And Roger's presence also reminds me that webcasting today, which is something that we don't have budget provision for within the Names Council, has been provided or is sponsored by VeriSign, for which we are indeed grateful, as well as to the colleagues within the Buckland Centre who enable it to happen. So let's move on to the first item, if that's okay, within our business plan, and that is UDRP. And I think, Guillermo, you're going to lead us into that.
Yes, thank you. Well, the first issue in the business plan is to review and evaluate the Uniform Dispute Resolution policy that's been up and working for about a little more than a year. An assessment, at least from the IPC side, it's been working fairly well. We have detected that people are using the UDRP instead of going to national courts, and there's a very large number of cases so far. And we could say that it's something that it appears to be working well, but definitely I think at this point it's important to make a revision and an evaluation of what's going on, what are the issues that have arisen, so we're in a position to recommend the ICANN board certain policies about this. Some issues that had been arising and have been selecting views from other people is the selection process for the dispute resolution providers, reverse domain name hijacking. There's a lot of people saying things about this and how this affects the UDRP. What happens in case of consent judgments? Should there be a review panel or a revision of existing decisions, etc.? There are many things that people have been discussing lately, and I think it would be interesting to evaluate those. And additionally, there has been a study conducted by WIPO called the Domain Name Process WIPO 2, Request for Comment 2, mainly addressing issues that pertain to other rights than trademarks. So the strategy here is that within a time frame of 1 year, this year, 2001, to establish an interim committee and propose terms of reference for a Names Council task force or other group to make this work, make this evaluation process, and to have a policy or recommendation for the board when this review is finished. So I'd say that's about what we're thinking of UDRP.
Okay, thanks, Guillermo, for that. Are there any questions as to that or observations, additions? One of the things I was hearing earlier, talking to some of the newer registries, is that part of the learning process that's come already from the existing UDRP is what they're taking on board in terms of the way they're wishing to revise that. And I think that may be useful input into what can be models for the future. Any other comments, Paul?
Just as a matter of clarification, the WIPO 2 process, what is the timetable for WIPO 2 to conclude its work? So
it's, I think in April there, they will submit the third period of comment, and I think at the end of this year they will have the report finished, if so I'm recalling well.
We're looking at December 2001?
I think it's about that. I have to confirm.
Well, actually, I
just a little bit confused because a lot of interim committees we are going to seem to establish, and also there might be some chances to form NC task force in the future. So could you sort of clarify what kind of difference between interim committee and NC task force? And also, like, when we mentioned a lot of other groups, and so is it going to be the task for the interim committee, which is going to designate such kind of other groups?
Yeah, thanks, YJ. That's certainly answering. It's useful clarification. What the business plan task force did in, as you see, as we go through it, there's a number of occasions where we're suggesting an interim committee. And what we mean there is the sort of thing that we already set up, for instance, recently on Who Is, where just a small group of people get together with a short-term task, which is typically drafting terms of reference for what is needed in order to answer that particular issue. That group can simply be those who are interested. Typically, perhaps today we may decide on or ask somebody to be the lead on that to find a few other people to help with that task. And it will be up to that interim group to come back to the NC with a recommendation of the nature of the subsequent organization that's actually needed to deal with the issue. So it's a rather short-term thing, but it allows each issue to be thought through in a small huddle with a bit of networking by email or so. And that is its intention. Where the phrasing "or other group" appears, that is intentionally not saying working group, because what we're looking at is part of the whole process itself, of course, is looking at how do we have working groups in the future that work in ways which are better than in the past. And that's what I mean by other groups. So it's other group as yet to be defined by that part of the business plan which is charged with that.
Okay, so just for clarification, other groups here means it's working groups within the DNS. So is it my understanding?
Some sort of outreach group, yes.
Well, for example, regarding the WHOIS committee, I think we already have WHOIS task force, which has been led by Paul Kane, even though we really didn't work substantially yet. So, but still, we have an interim committee with WHOIS, under WHOIS. And another thing is under the number 4 CCTLDs, we don't have any mention. Interim committee or task force committees. So they're having some kind of inconsistency here. So is it also going to form such kind of committees?
There were different items, as there were different items on the list of objectives, there may have been different ways of achieving that. And as we go through them, we can, our job now is to agree that seems to be the optimal way of going forward. So let's do that issue at a time. And you're right in saying that an example of the WHOIS group already exists, and that is the reason that is in the plan here as well. It's simply been comprehensive and reflecting what we have done already, and that's why you're aware of that one that is there. So, are other questions or clarification needed on process? Paul,
how many members of the interim committee will be required, do you think?
Give us an example of let's say the Who Is group. That's 3 or 4.
We have representation, I think, from every member of every constituency, bar the registrar. So I think are still deciding who they wish to. Sorry, the registry who are still deciding who they wish to appoint. But that was quite a large group.
I'm just trying to think through what we've had in terms of sort of groups in the past. I mean, it's a small drafting group rather than anything that a group is making policy. Because there are a number of them proposed, I would suggest it may be better to keep them small, because otherwise NAMES Council members are going to be working overtime in order to try to do something with all of them. I think it's my view would be 3 is probably quite a good number, and a few more if necessary for topics that have great interest. Roger.
If I may just clarify, since there's only one member of the GTLD constituency, that member
will serve on the WHOIS committee, but I understand that it's possible for members to send representatives, and we may exercise our flexibility to do that. But we will participate. The registry is an important part of the WHOIS question, and I'll be the member.
Okay, thanks for that.
Yes. Another thing is regarding the chairing all those different committees, because so far within the Names Council, we have had a business task force plan and also budget plan, budget task force, and four task forces, which have been chaired by registrar constituency and business constituency and GTLD constituency, basically. So we do have a lot of diverse task forces in the future. So as it was presented in the Marina del Rey meeting, the chairs of the future task forces should be distributed to the various constituencies. For example, non-commercial constituency hasn't been chairing any task force in the Names Council yet. So I think that kind of more diversity in the chairing should be considered.
I think that's something we can all support, isn't it?
Yes.
Michael?
I just wanted to come in to introduce myself, Mike Schneider from the OSB constituency, so I've been meeting a couple of minutes late, and I would ask the scribe to add me to the list of attending members. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, in terms of kicking off that item on UDRP and an interim group, Diana, would you be happy to start that process? I think what we'll do in each case is perhaps today suggest who the focal point for the interim groups will be, where they exist, and then ask that person to solicit additional support. And of course, if anybody wants to self-nominate to any of those groups, then of course they can do so. I think that's probably the best way forward. I'm happy with that. Ken?
Yeah, I'd like to work with Guillermo.
Okay, great.
The UDRP.
Okay. Right, Ken and YJ? Very good. It's all happening rapidly. Second item is new TLDs within the plan. I think that's myself to speak on that. And what I think we were looking at here really is a little bit a view into the future. And the wording on the plan in terms of the top line objective, and there were two of them, is to review and evaluate the new TLD registries with respect to the impact on net users and the creation of a stable domain name system with high user confidence. And this may involve proposing changes for consideration for the ICANN board. And that has a relatively long time frame on it. We had a time frame 2002, so it may well be there's obviously a need for the registry to be up and running so we can see how it is functioning compared to how we assumed it might function and then make a comment on that. The second objective listed under TLDs is to review and evaluate the selection criteria for additional new applicants for new TLDs, to propose changes in the rollout schedule for consideration by the ICANN board, timeframe 2002. This may be a more challenging task, but I think something that seemed to have raised quite a high level of interest when we were discussing what we wanted to do with TLDs. The underlying strategy again here is the establishment of an interim committee to look at precisely the terms of reference as needed and the shape of the necessary group or groups to take that forward. Questions? All clear with that. Is there anybody who is particularly key? Yes, YJ and Kira.
I think this might be very interesting. I mean, for those registrars, but we have just a time frame 2002, so it's a little bit unclear whether it could be a spring quarter or sort of like a winter or something. So can we have more specific time frame rather than just the 2002?
I mean, happy for suggestions. The planning of it is necessarily difficult because we don't know. The question that everybody's asking is when is the first of the new GTLDs going to be rolled out and operating? And then only after a period of that happening, and perhaps it's happening with a number of them, will we be in a process to review, which is why we had
of the longest timetable put on that, but if we want to try to be more specific or phrase it in a different way, we certainly can do so.
Erica Roberts, I feel very comfortable with this, but I am reminded that once the new GTLDs are up and operating, then they will have representatives on the Mains Council. So we'll have the benefit of their advice in looking at evaluation procedures. I think it's important that it's in our business plan at this stage, but I'm not sure that it's necessary at this stage to further fine down what we need to do. In fact, I think we'd be much better off leaving it until those new GTLDs are rolled out and we have the benefit of new representatives from the registries on the Mains Council.
Do you think, therefore, there's a need to form now a group to start thinking about it, or we should wait until at least the date of the first registry before we form something, Ken?
I think we're served quite well by waiting for. I would probably suggest we take this specific item and table it until Stockholm. By then we would be a much clearer view. And we may very well, after reviewing the appendices of the agreements between ICANN and the new registries, have much better platform to review and establish evaluation.
Okay, Bob.
I'm mindful of the fact that the suggestion here is a strategy to determine the terms of reference, and I concur with the last two statements as to the benefit of input from the new TLDs on the substance. But I would have thought we could come up with the terms of reference. I think it's desirable to come up with terms of reference sooner rather than later. Because I think there is a great interest out there as just what is going to be the process whereby the new TLDs are going to be evaluated and therefore set the process going forward for further new TLDs. So given that distinction that what's being suggested here simply is the, as a first step, the determination of terms of reference, I would suggest that we should try and get on with that so that we would have something that could be ratified certainly before Stockholm. And I'm happy to participate in that.
Yeah, Roger and Erica as well, was it? Yeah, Roger.
I actually want to support